When that robot voice comes in, you know it is time to begin. And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to
ELC.
Woo! Especially if you're one of our geeks and sneaks, using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Or hey, maybe you're getting that last minute Christmas tree hung, putting the lights on with the twinkles and the little globules. I don't know. I don't know what you're doing. I don't know how you do it. Popcorn? Do people use popcorn still? Whatever the case, we're going to be in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free thanks to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. Those fine folks bring this show to you. Their support, their generosity means we get to keep making these, and boy, are we grateful. In exchange, patrons get some cool perks, including ad-free versions of the show, video versions of the show on demand, and a whole bevy of bonus content. You got your Feeling This Fridays, where Christian Spicer and Alex Solman talk about the feelings behind video games. It's a whole other show. It's fantastic. You've got bonus chats. We're getting an interview with Ryan Payton coming up next week for patrons early, talking about Batman Arkham Shadow. It's going to be a good one. We've got the Wednesday paid DLC program, where Lana Bashinsky joins Christian Spicer and myself talking about what you want to talk about, the patrons. That's always a good time. Wacky fun. So much extra goodness. All you got to do is sign up to support the show at patreon.com/DLCpod. But this show, the main show, DLC, it's the show all about games. In their many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata. That's spelled with two N's and one T. And I am joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis, the guy who's always nipping at your nose, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello, Jeff. Hello, everyone. Yeah, the last episode of this season of Feeling This, season three, was posted on Friday for all patrons. Alex and I talked about puzzles, and that's both puzzle games and puzzle mechanics in other games. Really, really fun, fascinating chat. He talked about some insight from some of the games that he's worked on over the years. And then also adding it to the mix of fun holiday content coming, Philippe, Alex, and I are trying to circle the wagons to do more Alan Wake 2 spoiler chats now that both DLC expansions are out. So we're trying to get the crew back together for that. And guess what, Jeff? There's more. Secret Santa has come through, and we have 10 one-month Cool Ranch level Patreon subscriptions to give out to new patrons donated to us by Secret Santa himself. And so if you are interested in one of those Cool Ranch level patron subscriptions, which gets you paid DLC and everything else, send us an email at dlcfeedback@gmail.com, subject line Secret Santa, and we will pull 10 out of that randomly and give you your one free month to the Cool Ranch level over on Patreon. Again, that is for new patrons only. So email us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com, subject line Secret Santa, and have yourself a happy, happy holiday.
And we do need to thank our Secret Santa. It is awesome that Secret Santa decided to share the joy this holiday season and bring some folks into the wonderful world of being patrons. Hopefully those folks will have so much fun with that extra content that they'll stick around with us. You know, I did make the prediction end of last year. One of my big Cool Ranch predictions, Christian, was that we would hit a certain threshold. We're so close. We just need a few more patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. But we have a big show for you this week. We got tons to talk about, some huge releases, including a certain hat-wearing, whip-wielding fella. And, ladies and gentlemen, we have an awesome guest to do it with. You know that DLC always stands for your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, woohoo, I'm excited because DLC stands for destinations where Lucy chats. Because those places include Friends Per Second, GameSpot, Giant Bomb, and now we are so pleased to add DLC to that list by welcoming Lucy James to the show for the first time. Hi, Lucy.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. What an intro. I was like, oh, what's DLC going to stand for with me? And then, oh, nailed it. Thank you for having me.
We're delighted to have you. I'm so excited. I know that you and Christian have both been playing Indiana Jones. I can't wait to hear about it. We got so much to get into. So let's do it. Let's start the show the way we always do, with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. You can also send comments, questions, anything you'd like us to know. That's where you send it. dlcfeedback@gmail.com. And boy, we love hearing from you. Also, in addition, you can hang out in our Discord. Good times had by all in the Discord. That's 5x5 DLC on Discord. Lots of great stuff happening. Cool community. Urge you to take part, ladies and gentlemen. But Lucy, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
Ooh, I want to talk about the fact that there's a report that Kotaku reported on claiming that gamers spend more time watching games than playing them.
Yes, this was first reported by gamesindustry.biz, and there's a company evidently called Media Research that has been collecting data from not just the US, but the UK, Australia, Canada, Germany, France, Sweden, South Korea, and Brazil. So this is a global study to a certain extent that looked at how many hours different kinds of gamers spend playing games, as well as watching videos about games. And it turns out, according to their report, that the gamers they surveyed, now this is self-reported, it sounds like, so it's not like they're looking at hard data, but this is what the gamers are self-reporting. According to their survey, gamers said they typically spend at an average of 7.4 hours a week gaming, but 8.5 hours a week watching game-related videos. Media also claimed that 24% of console and PC players and 48% of people who regularly buy stuff in-game watch video game-related content every month. Now, the reason Media put this out, you'll be shocked to learn, ladies and gentlemen, is they want people to pay them to use this information to make money. And so they have some recommendations about how publishers can start integrating video content into their product verticals. Here's their quote. Quote, "It's time for game publishers to think about in-game video as something beyond marketing alone. By reclaiming video engagement, publishers have the potential to unlock new revenue streams like advertising and drive growth." So it seems to me there are two separate issues here. One is just the claim that, you know, I think we've gotten to the point where people are watching more video games being played than actually playing them, which I think is a very interesting topic to get into. But also, it seems like this is a potential red flag in how companies might decide, hey, let's not let people just put stuff on Twitch or YouTube. Let's have it be proprietary and on our platform and lock it down so that we get those eyeballs and we can monetize it in our own way. So, Lucy, I'm curious. I mean, this was your story of the week. Which of those two, or is there a third, that piqued your interest most?
I mean, mostly it's because it ignited something in myself, which I didn't realize, is that I obviously spend a lot of time gaming. I spend a lot of time talking about games. But I have started to I just watch videos about gaming to relax. Maybe more than I do play games, sometimes, depending on what's out at the moment, what I need to play kind of for work and to keep on top of things. But we also have this with Friends Per Second, where we have people, we have users who write in and they say that, you know, they haven't played games for years, but they still listen to our podcast, watch our podcast, and watch videos about gaming, which I think is like a really fun thing that I just kind of, I didn't really realize that I and so many other people interact with the hobby in that way, I suppose. Do you find that with DLC? People say
we
that
do.
They don't
yeah,
play?
We get yeah. that. We get that frequently. People saying, "Hey, you know, I've started a family, or I work a lot more than I used to in my gaming heyday, but I still am interested in the hobby, and I like to stay connected by hearing you guys talk about it." We get that all the time, and mm-hmm. I can understand that in the sense that, you know, you're on your commute, you can put a podcast on, you can listen to people talk about games and sort of feel connected. I certainly do that with a number of other fields that I'm like, I get to listen to that and feel like I'm knowledgeable about it, even if I don't have as much time to invest in it firsthand. But I don't know if, I mean, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, Lucy, but I don't know if video watching is the same calculus, because it feels like if you have time to watch a video, maybe you have time to play a game, or am I off base there?
I wonder if it's also sort of a barrier to entry thing. So to use me as an example, right? I sometimes at the end of the day, if I'm in horizontal couch time, the feeling of turning on my PC, figuring out what I'm going to play, you know, I don't want to get up and move around. I don't want to do that. But I think when I watch content about video games, so specifically right now, and also I'm sorry if anyone hears my cat purring, but this is peak. Hey, why aren't we horizontal couch time now? So she's kind of hovering around the mic. But I love Elden Ring, right? I have between PlayStation and PC, you know, 200 at least hours in that game. I love watching videos of other people play Elden Ring because they play it in ways that I cannot. Mm. So I really love watching challenge runs of Souls games, in particular Elden Ring. And like I watch, there's a thing on right now, I just finished actually, called Bingo Brawlers, where people will face off against each other and they get a bingo board of things to do in Elden Ring. So it could be, you know, beat a specific boss by doing, you know, get X many parries or collect a certain amount of things. And so I will never play that. I will never play Elden Ring that way. But I love watching other people do that. And so also there are just some games that I cannot play because maybe it's old hardware that I don't have. And like you said, it's a way of kind of engaging with the hobby, even if you're not necessarily playing that specific game.
Yeah. And I suspect there's also economic factors, right? You know, it's easy to log on to Twitch if you've got an internet connection. Maybe you're not able to buy the latest $70 game, but you want to watch it. That's probably a factor as well. And I certainly know anecdotally, I have friends that the first thing they do, doesn't tend to be how I approach things, but maybe I'm out of date and old and ready to melt into dust. But I have many friends who the first thing they do when they start a new game is go watch videos on how best to approach it, what starting build, what this, what that, you know. Mm-hmm. So the viewing of videos is part of the onboarding process almost of a new gaming experience.
Is it the new, I guess we used to have manuals, is watching a YouTube video on the best starting class?
Games
manual?
I do think that's true. I mean, I certainly still resist that because I like the discovery process myself. But I do think that for many, that's, you know, your favorite Twitch streamer or your favorite YouTuber or just the YouTuber you Googled today who's been playing that game more than you is going to be the best way for you to feel like you understand what's going on day one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there are certain people on YouTube or on Twitch who I actively want to hear what they are saying about this specific game. So, you know, for example, Dragon Age: The Veilguard, I would want to know what Ash, Lady Insanity, thinks about it, for example, because she's been so ingrained in the community for so long. And so, and Souls, and I mean, when I used to play Apex Legends back in the day, when I used to have the energy, like I would want to know what Shroud thought of a new meta, or I'd want to know what Stylosa thought of Overwatch. And so there are certain people that I would go to for specific games.
It's interesting. It does feel like a paradigm that I'm not quite in yet. But Christian, I'm curious what you think about this, and particularly the sort of second half of this question in the sense that, you know, their recommendation here, this media, I guess it's, I was pronouncing it media, but I guess it's obviously a pun media, M-I-D-I-A. But hey, we're talking about media. And, you know, their suggestion that these companies can find additional revenue streams by stopping this being just a PR outreach and making video content creation part of the product that they are selling. What do you make of that?
Yeah. I mean, first I would say that, you know, my knee-jerk reaction to all of this is it sure seems like people that watch games like playing games. I think it's funny to say gamers watch more than they play. Well, then are you a gamer? You know, you're a watcher who plays a lot of games. That second part of it, the pivot to video, Jeff, I think it's going to work this time.
Everything's cyclical.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it'll work
this time. If we pivot enough times, we end up in a 360-degree rotation.
And then sometimes you travel along the way. But I think Lucy made some great points, and I think part of that is Universal, you are looking for a trusted voice in this game or community or genre to share their opinion about it, their insight, their expertise. And oftentimes, content produced by the company itself can rarely deliver that. There have been exceptions. There have been some excellent podcasts and documentaries and the Psychonauts, what was that called? That series, fantastic, right? The development of Psychonauts 2, fantastic. So there is stuff, but oftentimes a lot of the stuff that comes out is like in-depth, you know, we're going to break down the combat. This game's awesome. Look how awesome the combat is. Look at this awesome combat. And it just doesn't have the same thing as a third party whose voice you trust or whose expertise you rely on walking you through it. So I don't know how reliable this pivot that they're proposing will be, especially considering the cost, because making media in-house is often way more expensive than outsourcing it to the public to hopefully do it for you if they fall in love with your product, which is, I think, where we've landed right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of, I mean, there are a lot of companies that make really good like content about, like, you know, I think Square Enix at the moment, for example, they're doing like an actor on actor type thing. They had Ben Starr and they had Matt Mercer, you know, like, but again, it's a publisher asset, but at the same time, it's hard to, I think, for the people making that content to make it authentic. And I think Square is doing a really good job of that at the moment. But yeah, there is always going to be that barrier where it's like, oh, well, this is being made by the publisher, so obviously they're just going to say good things about it.
Yeah, I think you guys are right that what draws people to game videos is probably the exact opposite of what a game maker is able to bring to it. They were specifically looking for people who weren't involved in making of the game to create content, and I think that's what media misses here. I think you guys are correct in pointing that out.
Yeah, I think Christian nailed it. I think Psych Odyssey was, I really hope that kind of breaks down some walls, just because it is such a raw portrayal of what game development is like. And even, you know, when they were getting acquired by Microsoft, and that's all in there, and that's ridiculous. I think they hired the people from the production company. Like, they were just fully embedded. And that kind of stuff is awesome. And obviously the work that Danny O'Dwyer is doing with NoClip and Alex Van Aken's new thing, like Viewport. And there's just so many of those things that I hope are just going to become more and more commonplace, because a big thing, you know, obviously on the games media side of things is access is tough. You got to, you know, anything that I've ever done where we go to a studio, you have to be met kind of halfway by not only the developers, but like PR. There are sometimes they're just like, oh, well, you know, we don't really want to tell that story. But sometimes you do get the occasional opportunity where they're like, yeah, warts and all, let's do it. And so I hope that kind of thing is, you know, demystifying the development process, I think, is really important.
Yeah. It is an extraordinary time in that, you know, basically anybody can watch the best people in the world at any given game play that game all the time. And it's that's a pretty I can understand that's a pretty attractive thing to watch. Like, just high skill level play of anything is pretty compelling. So, you know, I think that might be almost the beginning and end of it, is like you get to watch people who are excellent at something be excellent at it. Why not and watch it?
You can watch that while you're at work. You know, like yeah. A lot of times you can second screen that stuff. And I think people still get a lot of engagement out of that. But you can't second screen game the same way. You know, you can't be sitting at work and then also have your game that you're
tell
actually
that to cookie clicker, Christian.
God, I remember a while ago, it was when did Hearthstone come out? 2015, 2016?
Well, maybe.
There was so much traffic going to Battle.net that GameSpot in the UK, our IT department banned us access to Battle.net, and we had to be like, actually, we need this because obviously we're covering video games. It was just because we were playing Hearthstone so much. So
that's funny. That's funny. Well, still interesting, and I'm curious what listeners' perspective is on this. Do you spend more time watching than playing? Let us know. I'm curious if just our little edge of the world over here is relates to that or feels like it's inaccurate. Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
Well, there's a very big story, and I'm going to be the guy who skips it because I know then you'll have to bring it up, so we'll get to talk. We'll still get to talk about it. But the thing that I want to talk about this week that I find very interesting is this report that Apple and Sony are working together to add PSVR2 controller support to the Apple Vision Pro.
Yeah.
Apparently, an announcement was planned to roll out weeks ago, but it's been postponed. And also, apparently, Apple would sell PSVR2 controllers standalone in their store and online. And as of right now, you know, those controllers are not available standalone. There'd be no need for them, right? They're bundled with the headset. And I think that this is really interesting in terms of Apple's approach to gaming, continuing to rely on quote unquote traditional gaming companies to provide those peripherals. If you go into an Apple store, you'll see a PS5 controller next to an Apple TV. You know, they're very much advertising that way to play. And now adding these controllers to Apple Vision Pro, I wonder if they see that as knocking down this barrier of entry for having the VR games, traditional VR games on their headset. Because as is, everything on the Vision Pro is controlled with your eyes or, you know, tapping your fingers or using a traditional Xbox style controller to play essentially Apple Arcade games on a big floating screen in front of you. But could you now be playing Resident Evil 7 VR on an Apple Vision Pro, you know, with these controllers? What does this open up? Does it open up Steam VR to the Apple Vision Pro headset? I know this is probably kind of unique to you and I, Jeff, as we're still beating the VR drum in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But I think this is a fascinating, you know, another opening that Apple might be looking to take.
Yeah, I was pretty shocked when I read this news. Now, the reports that I saw said that, you know, part of Apple's plan for this is that you'll use these PSVR 2 controllers as, you know, productivity tools. You know, you're going to be controlling Final Cut Pro with them. So I don't know if it is exclusively a video game flex. I hope so, as a Apple Vision Pro owner. And I say that knowing full well that Lucy will begin judging me. but I own an Apple Vision Pro and I own a PlayStation VR 2. So I am the Venn diagram, ladies and gentlemen, that's ready for these drivers to work. Put me in, coach. Make my PSVR 2 controllers work with my Apple Vision Pro. I will be a very happy boy because while I still do use my Apple Vision Pro periodically, I'll tell you what I've actually gotten some emails about this. People are like, hey, give us an update. Are you still using your Vision Pro that you spent your entire child's college fund to buy? And the answer is occasionally. I think it is a really excellent media consumption tool, and that especially if you're like me, somebody who actually digs 3D movies, old 3D movie, you know, when they made 3D movies, and they still do to a certain extent. Nothing better than watching a 3D movie on Apple Vision Pro. It's exquisite. But watching, you know, their IMAX app is awesome because it really feels like you're in an IMAX theater. So I use it for that. And what I mostly use it for is basically being Tom Cruise from what's the
Minority Report?
Minority Report. The sad. I sit in my basement office with my Apple Vision Pro on, looking at 3D movies I've taken of my children, wistfully thinking, oh, if only they looked so cute. And they're like sleeping in a different floor of my house, but I still wistfully look at them like they've, you know, passed on, and I'm about to pass on. It's just this weird, but it's still cool. Anyway, that was a little tangent, but the point I'm trying to make is I'm ready for PSVR 2 controllers to work on Apple Vision Pro, and that be the green light for developers to put some games on this thing, because it really needs it, or I really want it is more accurate, I suppose, because I while the control of the Apple Vision Pro is sort of magical that it works at all the way they want it to, I still don't like it. I still do prefer, just let me push a button. You know, I don't want to have to stare intently at the icon and then tap my fingers together. Just give me a button. Give me a D-pad and let me scroll over to it and push a button. It's so much easier and more casual. I'm ready for that to be an Apple Vision Pro thing. And I do think the games would look freaking amazing on this thing, because the screens are so great. I know I'm in the wild minority of people that actually has one of these things, but I'd love to play games on it, even if I don't think the PSVR 2 controllers are the best VR controllers, specifically this week, which we'll get into later. I'm pretty frustrated with my PSVR 2 controllers, but I think this would be cool. Anyway, I've talked a long time. Lucy, what do you think?
Oh, so this is a world that I am not really into. The only experience I've had with the Vision Pro was Jake Baldino, my co-host on Friends Per Second, FaceTimed me while using it. So I got to see the fake Jake.
Fake Jake, the creepy, the Uncanny scary. Valley version.
The Jake made in Unreal Engine 3. Right. And so I think he kept his too. And I know that Gary Witter is a big, big fan. So I definitely know people in gaming adjacent, who love their Vision Pro and who kept it. For me, it was just something that I didn't want to delve into, because I get really motion sick, which is very frustrating for me, because I was at Gamescom when Vive was kind of debuted, and it was there for the first time. And I remember doing like some of those early demos and just thinking, wow, this is incredible. This could change the game. Pun not intended. And I am really sad, because I just get such horrific motion sickness. Not from everything. I can play Beat Saber. I am really struggling, sadly, with Batman Arkham. We were talking before we started recording, Batman Arkham Shadow, which I'm really annoyed by, because I'm a huge Batman fan, and I hear the story in this one is really great. From what I've played, I really, really enjoyed it. Unfortunately, I just I can't do it for too long. So I don't have a PSVR 2. I know there are some really great games that I'm missing out on. But also, I think, just as kind of an outside perspective, I think this partnership is really interesting, because from an outside looking in, it looked like Sony had given up on PSVR 2. Closing London Studio obviously is a big blow. But it also kind of felt like Apple was sort of giving up on the Vision Pro. It kind of had this moment. And actually, I will say, we did see people at, I remember at DICE in Las Vegas, like this, there's a video game kind of, it's more like a businessy convention kind of thing, like a trade show. And I do remember people rocking up to the bar wearing Vision Pros. And that was the only time I live in San Francisco.
And leaving alone.
Yes. No, there was two guys, and they were both wearing Vision Pros. But like, I live in San Francisco, and I haven't even seen people wearing them out and about. And so it felt like there were these kind of groundswell moments, and then there was nothing. And so this, it actually feels like the two companies kind of banding together to give users kind of a little more reason to be invested in the ecosystem. And I do genuinely think gamers are certainly the way to do it, because we're always looking for ways to experience, like, how are we next going to experience gaming? What's the next thing that we can push to? And the Vision Pro, from what I've seen, just looks really impressive. And I think, yeah, pairing them with controllers, something like Resident Evil, like you said, like one of those experiences would just be really cool. Because whenever I get new tech, you know, when the first time I was streaming games through xCloud, Xbox xCloud, I immediately got my phone and showed my dad. And I was like, look, I'm playing a Yakuza game and it's on my phone and I'm not, you know, and he's, you know, he was like, I don't know what this game is.
Sounds like your really dad's huge into Yakuza.
Yeah, my dad now dressing up like Majima for Halloween. No, but he was like, oh, that's really cool. And so, yeah, my dad gets kind of like interested in that way. And that's the thing with kind of gaming where it's like you can just show people. And you're like, look at how cool this is. Look at what games do now. And so, yeah, it just kind of feels like this perfect marriage of the two technologies.
Yeah, you're right. It's like the Lonely Hearts Club. You know, we're like, we're about to give up on our tech. Oh, us too. Let's high five. And that is a funny observation and accurate. Yeah, I think I have long thought, well, at least since I plunked down my hard-earned money for the Vision Pro, that it baffles me that Apple is just not pursuing any kind of gaming content on this thing at all. It baffles me because I know that it's been Apple's MO to ignore gaming for most of the life cycle of that company, but not recently, right? They were like all about gaming on MacBooks and you know promoting gaming on even on the iPhone and everything. It felt like they'd finally come around on gaming, and then they have this thing that could actually be a stellar VR headset, and they just completely ignored that segment of the population. And I don't understand it. Hopefully this indicates some course correction there. And, you know, as an owner of this thing, there's not enough to do on it, I think. I know they really want it to be just a productivity tool and a way to extend your workflow into spatial computing, but I want games, baby. So hopefully this will do that. Christian, what do you think? Think this is a smart idea?
Well, if you go back and listen to our prediction episode from last year or the beginning of this year, Jeff, you will quickly learn that Apple's decision not to support gaming on the Vision Pro in no way baffles me.
Yeah, I know.
In fact, 0% baffles me. I do think that you made a great point about them, how they talked about opening this up to Final Cut and other still productivity aspects. I do think there is a level of precision that you get with a controller.
Definitely.
That hand tracking still does not provide. So whether it's surgery, remote surgeries, you know, a lot of those current, you're in the same room, but using a tool, a robotic tool to help you in surgical operations or other mechanical operations or maneuvers, you are using essentially a video game controller. And so bringing that over into the VR space where then the person is able to use something very familiar to them that they're already using to pull off this skill that they have, I think makes a lot of sense. So whether it is a little more precision in Final Cut Pro or, you know, helping with maybe now you can do remote surgeries and VR helps you makes you feel like you're more in the room than what right now they're doing it just on flat screens or something like that. Adding that controller support, I think, will be important for a lot of folks. And so, you know, I like seeing this as Lucy brought up. It's, you know, whether it's two failing tech kind of coming together to handshake, I think emergent tech often needs help. And I like that companies seem to be willing to help each other in this space, kind of even Meta opening up to, you know, supporting Steam or allowing Steam on their platform
and
wireless and wireless Steam Play. And Xbox cloud streaming on the Meta Quest and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I think that they're seeing that this tech still needs help along the way. And I like that they're working together and not just complete walled gardens anymore.
Cue the that Rocky meme with the two bulging bicep arms shaking hands. My last little button on this story is that I hope the little conspiracy theory take on this, the reason that it has been postponed, that this rollout was supposed to happen weeks ago, but it got postponed, is because they're pairing it with cool video game announcements. Like, hey, you can play. It's going to be in the App Store. Get your Resident Evil 7 or whatever the game is going to be.
That's what's going to make the Game Awards hype this year is Vision Pro announcements.
I was going to say, do you think they scooped a Game Awards announce?
That would be sick.
Not for
Half-Life
Jeff.
Alyx on Vision Pro.
I mean, if they came out with Half-Life Alyx, for sure. And the thing is, you know, I'm just my hot VR take is that I don't think they've fumbled anything harder than Beat Saber releasing Beat Saber packs, because that should be the cash cow. They should be Guitar Heroing the crap out of that. But no, we're just getting, we're having to wait how many years for Britney? Britney should have been day one. That's my hot take. That's the only one I've got.
I mean, not wrong. Not wrong.
Well, we got lots more hot takes coming at you. But first, we're going to take a quick break for a sponsor. We'll be right back right after this.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
All right, yes, we're already long on this segment, but you guys left me the biggest, chunkiest, meatiest story of the week, and that is PC Gamer had a show, a big big show, big stream full of comic bits and trailers. They call it their Most Wanted. They've done it a few years now. PC Gaming Show Most Wanted, wherein they not only lay down the top 25 most wanted PC games for the following year, in this case 2025, but they also show a bunch of trailers for games that'll be available, and even some reveals. Not too many world premieres this year, but a number of them. And definitely my story of the week, because I had a great time watching all these trailers. I mean, it was a very long 2.5 hour event. So there's a lot of fluff in there that I think could have probably been trimmed, but such is the case with the PC game show stuff. And I've come around, and I find it kind of endearing at this point, how kind of goofy and bloated all their stuff is. But it's because they tend not to say no to people. At least that's what appears to me. And that means we get tons of games. There were dozens of games highlighted and shown off. I'm going to name a couple that tickled my fancy. Maybe each of you can tell me if there's any that stood out to you. I think that Journey to the Savage Planet is a woefully underrated game of the last several years. It kind of came and went. Not a lot of people talk about it. I thought the game was delightful. I had a blast playing Journey to the Savage Planet. I think it's still on Game Pass if you want to check it out. But the reason I bring it up is because the PC Game Most Wanted show showed off a trailer for its ostensible sequel, seems like a strong word. Another game in the franchise, I'll say that, called Revenge of the Savage Planet, set on the titular Savage Planet. And this one looks to be third person, whereas Journey to the Savage Planet was a first person shooter and platformer. This one looks to be a third person and has co-op coming out in May 2025. I'm just delighted to see this franchise continuing, and I thought it looked pretty fun. The other game I'll bring up is called Enter the Chronosphere, which looks like it was made just for me. This is a bullet hell shooter done as a turn-based game, which seems just cross purposes. It feels like that's impossible. How do you do it? This looks really, really cool. The bullets only move when you move. Take your turn. Got to know where to go. Turn based, and then the bullets all move as you're moving. Looks so slick and so cool. I am super excited for Enter the Chronosphere, just to see how will they pull off this audacious premise. Certainly, lots of other games on the list. Lucy, were there any? Did you happen to catch any of this? And were there any trailers or game announcements that you were interested in?
So I did not get a chance to watch it because it is kind of all systems go at work at the moment. However, they did feature a couple of games that I have wishlisted and that I'm very excited for. Cairn, which is the kind of the climbing game.
Yes. I love that we have this new like climbing game subgenre that's kind of percolated up in the last couple years.
Yeah, and it was at Summer Game Fest. I want to say they either announced it there or it had a trailer in Summer Game Fest, and so I'm really intrigued by that one. Kind of more of a like an emotional take on climbing, but also you've got to kind of manage your stamina, and I'm really intrigued by that one. But the other one is, because I'm a big puzzle game fan, Lorelei and Golden Idol are two of my absolute favorites from this year. The other one that I'm very excited about, and it had a demo, I think at last Steam Next Fest, or maybe the one before, is Blue Prince.
Oh, yes. I played that during Steam Next Fest. It's so smart. Such a cool game.
I can't wait for that one. I'd love a puzzle game. I love a puzzle game so much. And I really enjoy them when they have, you know, kind of the wider connective tissue is also really smart. And I think Blueprints, which I'm going to go against myself here and say that I love a puzzle game, but I'm also really stupid because I didn't get that Blueprints was a pun.
Delightful pun.
Because you're building like building a house? Question mark? I don't know.
You're sort of adding rooms to a house as you explore it.
And maybe it's just because I just finished reading House of Leaves a few months ago. I was like, getting big House of Leaves vibes from this. This weird house. I'm very excited for that one. Obviously a lot of my friends super, super excited about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Tactical Takedown.
Yeah, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is getting a tactics game. It's called TMNT Tactical Takedown. Christian, I'm sure you're thrilled about this as the resident TMNT freak on the show.
I love TMNT. I don't love Tactical Takedown. So I love that folks that do, you know, because what I like about Ninja Turtles right now is that they are making more or less pretty dang good entries in everything. The comics right now are pretty great. Mutant Mayhem, the movie was awesome. Shredder's Revenge, the throwback brawler was awesome. So we're getting a lot of great Turtles media right now. And for them to do a tactics game, sure, why not? I would love for tactics fiends to be able to get their TMNT on.
Oh, that was the end? I thought there was going to be a butt. I thought the butt was coming.
No, I mean, it's not for me, but I'm excited for people that like it, you know?
The aesthetic is interesting. It looks like TMNT characters as like tabletop miniatures. So they're static, non-animated. They look like little figurines that you pick up and move on a grid. Very different kind of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle game. So I'm intrigued by it. Totally echo Lucy's thoughts about Cairn. I don't know how to pronounce it. Cairn. Cairn. I think it's Australian, isn't it? Cairn.
Cairn. I believe I think they're in Malmo. I think the team. But Cairn as a word sounds Scottish to me.
I thought it was Australian. Anyway, whatever the case, it does look very cool.
Isn't it
beautiful?
Isn't it what it's when you build like stones, you build a little stone tower, like a thing? It's like a marker, right?
Now we're just.
Scottish or Irish, I feel like that word.
I think it is. Like a stack of stones.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
There you go. Waypoint. Looks awesome, whatever the case.
And while you two are awesome, you're both idiots for not mentioning the best looking game out of all of these, Spine. Oh my gosh. That's the game.
Gun-Fu game.
I hope it delivers. It looks like, what was it, Most Wanted came out last year, 2 years ago. I thought was going to give me this high that I've been chasing. There's been a few games that have been chasing the honest-to-goodness John Wickification of 3D action game. And what they've shown of the gameplay now of Spine, it looks like, Lucy, an Arkham-style game, perhaps.
You have my attention.
Close-quartered gun finishers.
Ooh.
It looks so slick. I really hope it delivers. The media they put out so far, though, was absolutely exquisite, and they debuted, I think it was the debut of the in-game footage during this PC showcase, and my gosh, it looks, if it controls half as good as it looks, ooh, I mean, it has like Sifu vibes a little bit in there as well.
Yeah.
It looks awesome. Absolutely awesome.
I'm on the Steam page. It looks amazing.
They showed it a long time ago, and it did not look this good in my recollection. I think it has gotten a major upgrade visually, and it dazzles now, certainly in this new trailer.
Yeah, the animations are slick and fluid. It looks really, really good.
I thought you would be all over this Drivers of the Apocalypse game.
You know, I'm not sure. There is another game I want to call out, but I'm not sure if that has enough meat on the bone for me, if that makes sense. Like, games were eating so good still.
Well, just to catch people up, they didn't catch the trailer. This is basically somebody went, I want to make Mad Max Fury Road the game. Or Furiosa the game. I mean, it's like just the action sequence.
The vehicular combat. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, very much the aesthetic of Mad Max, very much stuff you saw, like, you know, tethered to the car, but you have a parachute, so you can shoot out of the back of your car and then, you know, take down another car that way, and you're shooting, you know, fire out of your car and taking down another car. So it's kind of got a Twisted Metal thing. And anyway, I think it looks very much... inspired is not even a strong enough word. It's basically doing Fury Road, which I think that looked pretty cool. But you don't think it looks meaty enough?
Yeah, I think it looks cool. I just don't know if there's enough. Like, what's the campaign gonna be, or how do you stick around long enough in those moments? Like, I loved MotorStorm Apocalypse and those MotorStorm games, which weren't vehicular combat. It was still more traditional racing. But that arcade racer, I don't know if this is an arcade racer or not. That, you know, I'm not sure on it yet, but the other game that jumped out at me, and speaking of, you know, our interview this week with Ryan, I think this could be interesting to bring up as well, because Camouflage kind of launched with Republic. And during the showcase there, we saw the trailer for Eric's Home, which is a isometric perspective stealth game that in many ways reminds me of what Republic was doing or trying to do all the way. What is it, an iPhone 4 when that game came out? But I really like what Eric's Home is showing, and, you know, the perspective shift to a stealth game is one that we don't see that often from this isometric zoomed out perspective. And the trailer is really smart. And I think if the AI works well, I like the idea of a hitman in isometric. You know, I think it sounds really fun. So I really love that trailer.
It does look cool. And I think also one of the big marquee games that they debuted was Moonlighter 2. I really enjoyed the first Moonlighter. I thought Moonlighter 2 looked really cool as well. And then before we leave, I don't know if you guys have any comments on this, but according to their Most Wanted, the top 5 Most Wanted PC games of 2025 are: number 5, Grand Theft Auto 6. Number 4, Slay the Spire 2. Number 3, Monster Hunter Wilds. Number 2, Doom Dark Ages. And number 1, shocking me, I guess this is, you know, very PC centric, but the number 1 most wanted PC game of 2025, according to PC Gamer, Civilization 7.
Oh, actually, that checks out.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess GTA, they haven't even... They said that it's even coming to PC.
That's a good, that's a good point. That's a really good point.
I mean, yeah, because we have to wait, what, a year for it to, I mean, for 5 to come at least? And
the title is Most Wanted. It's not most actually going to happen.
I mean, it will come to PC for sure, but I mean, maybe
2 years later. Yeah.
I forgot that Civ's coming. I'm not personally into Civ, but I'm very excited for all the Civ heads. Is that what you call Civ fans?
Sure.
Who are, because that's a big deal. I remember when 6 came out, I lost multiple friends to it for a very long time. So
yeah, I'll call you back in just one more turn.
I'll go to bed in one more time.
All right, and there you go. That is our stories of the week. We got lots of games to get to, but first we're going to take another quick break for a sponsor. We'll be right back right after this. All right, let's talk about the games we've been playing in a segment we call The Playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on The Playlist. All right, so both of you two I've been able to play Indiana Jones and the Great Circle ahead of its Game Pass release. I'm waiting until Game Pass.
That's right now, Jeff. Yeah. Stop the show.
You could play it.
You could be playing it right now.
I know, but not like...
All right, that's our episode this week, everybody. Thanks, Lucy, fancy. For your...
Yeah. I have not played it. I have not played it. I have not even booted it up. So I am eagerly anticipating the two takes from our from you two. Lucy, let's start with you. I think I saw a... what are we calling them?
A skeet.
A skeet.
I'm gonna call it a post. Yeah.
Saying you might, it may very well be your game of the year.
Yep.
Scooting in right before the end of the year.
I know. I mean, I'll have words with whoever at Microsoft and Bethesda try to shove this one out at the end of the year after all the game of the year conversations and the Keelys have been happening.
Yeah.
Because this game rocks. I also think marketing-wise, they have desperately tried to downplay the fact that it is an immersive sim. because I wasn't interested in it, to be honest. I'm not a big Indiana Jones fan. Like, I watched them, the movies growing up, but, you know, I was always way more into sort of, you know, James Bond, even Star Wars when I was a kid. I didn't really gravitate towards Indiana Jones. The game rocks. They've nailed it. I could have probably done without the recreation of like the famous movie scene, you know, the swapping the golden idol.
Idol, yeah.
But everything else that I played, there's a moment, and I'm not gonna spoil anything, but there's a moment where you're kind of like you're setting up and you're on the hunt for stuff and you end up in the Vatican and you get given a priest's costume. And you change into it, and suddenly you can go to different places that you couldn't go before.
Mm.
And I was like, oh my God, is this Hitman? And I'm walking around pretending to be a priest in the Vatican, solving puzzles, breaking into places, you know, learning about history. I grew up Catholic, so I was very interested in this kind of the opening hours. Not getting into any combat at all. Just walking around the Vatican, stealthing my way through. And the other part of me was like, if this is Hitman, this is Hitman meets Dishonored. Mm. I am a huge Arkane fan. And Arkane and Machine Games obviously collaborated on Wolfenstein Youngblood a few years ago. And I was like, oh man, this is really good. And my favorite thing about this whole, because I was playing it early, I was getting texts from people who were also playing, who also didn't really have high hopes for it. Going, wait, does this game rule? I think this game rules. Am I being insane? Does this game rock? And I was like, yeah, I think it really does. And it just from the music to so Troy Baker, I saw that. I remember seeing that first trailer, and I clocked that it was Troy. Because he's a fantastic actor. He's very prolific. He's been in a lot of things, and I just recognize his voice, right? He is such a good Indiana Jones. Like, there are some moments where it's like, this is just Harrison Ford. Like, at no point was my immersion broken. And I don't say this to put a dampener on the performance, but Arkham Knight, for example, I recognized him. And so I knew kind of one of the twists of Arkham Knight because I recognized his voice. And, like, his performance is still great. It was just, like, there was something about the cadence or there was something about his, like, I just recognized him. In this, he just sounds so spot on for Harrison Ford. It is wild.
Wow.
And it's also a much bigger game than I thought it was. I mean, even the Vatican, I think I spent too long hanging around the Vatican. But yeah, there's just so much to do. There's kind of the main mission stuff. There's field work, which is basically what they're calling sort of side missions. And there's discoveries. There's also, did you ever play 007 Nightfire?
Yeah.
So, you know that mission where you're in the chalet and you're at the party and you've got a camera?
Yes.
You get given a camera in Indiana Jones and you get points for taking pictures of things that you can then use to unlock skills if you find the correct sort of skill book. And I'm just like, that is such a lovely way to gamify, to make this game mechanic make sense. Of course, Indiana Jones is going to be taking pictures of things so he can make notes about it. And he has the notebook and he's scribbling down things kind of like Nathan Drake does who in turn is obviously aping Indiana Jones. It's just great. I think it's made me an Indiana Jones fan. Anyway, I've talked a long time. Christian, what do you think?
I want to hear what Christian thinks, but I want to dig down to this just briefly before we get there. And because I've heard you, as you know, you've said you were talking a lot, which is great, but you never mentioned combat, which I think is a remarkable thing that you, all the things that you listed about what you were loving about it, not once did you talk about punching a Nazi or using a whip or any of that stuff. And I think that that sounds to me like a major differentiator from something like an Uncharted, where you're doing that kind of thing every few steps, right?
Yeah, I mean, so that's why I likened it personally to Dishonored, because I am a stealth player. And I'll knock you out, I'll knock out an enemy who is in my way. I will go for, the ghost clean hands achievement, don't just sneak past everyone, don't kill anyone. And so also, you know, it makes sense that Indiana Jones would not be, I mean, you do have a gun, but, you know, bullets are very limited. You can shoot people if necessary, if you get really, really stuck. However, the game makes it more fun, and this is kind of where the ImSim part kind of comes into it, where it's like, you can walk past, you know, you're on a dig site, there's a shovel. Well, what if I just hit the Nazi in the head with the shovel? What if I, but it's also comedy. Again, that's why I liken it to Hitman. And not to be reductive by comparing it to these other games, I think it takes what's great about those games and makes it into something, like, its own unique and really well-made game. And so, like, you can walk past a plunger. Like, I hit an Italian fascist with a plunger and knocked him out. The whip is really great. So one thing I do actually really like about it is that some of the enemies will have guard dogs, and obviously they don't want you to be, you know, killing dogs. And so what, every time you kind of come into contact with one, first of all, they're very sleepy boys, so you can just sort of stealth past them pretty easily. But if one of them tries to attack you, a little pop-up comes up and says, dogs get scared by whip cracks. So if you just crack the whip, the dog runs away and just kind of cowers in the corner. But yeah, like, if you do get into an event where you are in combat, they do really nice things. The sound work. So when you're landing punches, the final one sounds like a whip crack. And that's how you know you've knocked someone out. But yeah, I'm barely in any combat. There was one sort of boss fight, I guess, that I've come across so far. One thing that I didn't realize, and I'm saying this so that other people won't make my mistake, is the camera stuff feeds into the hint system. So there isn't the hint system is, if you get stuck on something, you just keep taking pictures of the puzzle, and that's how you get hints to pop up.
Oh, that's clever.
So I didn't realize, I was actually kind of a little bit struggling with this boss fight, because yeah, I've kind of been avoiding combat. And I was talking about it with someone else, and he went, well, yeah, why didn't you just take a picture of him? Because then it would give you a hint on how to defeat him, because it was a little bit of a puzzle boss. And I was like, oh, I should have thought of that. But no, Brilliant. It's great. I'm just really, really enjoying it.
That's phenomenal. I'm much more excited now. Christian, I know that you've had dogs in the past that hate 4th of July and refer to it as Night of the Whip Cracks.
My dogs have actually been great with fireworks. We've been very fortunate. I love this game. Indiana Jones and the Great Circle is phenomenal. Full stop. I'm not sure yet if it has muscled its way into my top 5. If it's like a top 6 or top 7 or top 10 that we got to do, Jeff, I certainly would be talking about this game again. Recency is right now playing a big bias, so I'm kind of letting it sit for a little bit before I reevaluate my list and we do our top 5 here in, what, 2 weeks, a week and a half, whenever that is.
Yeah.
So full stop, I love Indiana Jones in the Great Circle. I, unlike Lucy, though, am a Indiana Jones sicko. I love Indiana Jones. I've always loved Indiana Jones. I own the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles box sets unopened, you know, just in case that's going to pay for my kids' college one day. You know, who else wants these unopened Young Indiana Jones TV shows lying around? I love, 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 love Indiana Jones. And Indiana Jones and the Great Circle. And I should say, I put out an embargo review on our Patreon, right, for patrons, right when embargo went up. I was provided a code by Microsoft. I completed the game in a little over 17 hours, not finishing all of the side content. All of that boring stuff out of the way. This game, Indiana Jones and the Great Circle, in my opinion, is the third best Indiana Jones story ever told. It is Raiders of the Lost Ark, Last Crusade, Indiana Jones and the Great Circle. And depending on day, it might muscle its way into the top two. It is a really excellent Indiana Jones story. And as Lucy mentioned, Troy Baker knocks it out of the park. The entire cast absolutely knocks their performances out of the park. And the visual design of the characters are incredible as well. That is very much that indie character type. And the environments are beautiful. This game is stunning. And it runs very well on GeForce Now. I'm on the ultimate tier, ultra tier, whatever it's called. You can have all the bells and whistles on. It plays very well that way as well. But it feels like locations. Or, you know, it feels like locations in an Indiana Jones movie, I should say. You know, not necessarily does it feel like video game levels. There is a lot of Dishonored DNA in it, providing multiple routes through things at times. But the care that the team put into making these locations look and feel real and just be absolutely stunning pays off in spades. I mean, just there are moments that the title cards, the authenticity to the franchise, the sound ups, Lucy already mentioned the sound effects for the combat. I mean, it is just the punches from the movies that they, that indie lands that they used in those films as well. And you go into these environments and it just feels like you're on an Indiana Jones set, you know, or a location, I should say, because it doesn't feel like a movie set. It feels like you're actually there on location. Truly, truly, truly extraordinary. The story is compelling. The characters are well performed. And there are moments in the game where I'm just, you know, it's the highest of highs, like the best video gaming experiences up there. You know, pick your favorite game and it's right up there with it. I'm absolutely loving it. Just blown away by the experience. Top to bottom, fantastic. I think, however, where the game for me falls short a little bit is in some of the, if you want to call it immersive sim or the hub and spoke part of the world. And so you get into a couple of environments that have this hub and spoke where there is a main path you can take through things, but you're also provided with these optional field work missions or side missions that come up along the way. And I unfortunately don't think the AI is great. And I don't think it lets you fully play in that sandbox the way I would want to. That being said, if you can recognize that for what it is and kind of put it out of your mind and then just have fun in the world that they've provided, I think there's tons of lulls to be had. You know, there is a moment where I was in a disguise around a very highly populated by enemy area, but I'm in a disguise so I can just like walk through it or whatever. But then there's a zip line above that I then get on, put my whip on, and I zip line, you know, right at the heads of all these Nazi soldiers, just like zip line it. And they're just like going about their business. Like someone would be like, hey, what is that construction worker doing zip lining over our secure? But there is just none of that awareness in the characters that I think games like Hitman do have a little more of. It's I don't know if it's intentional silliness, but just the AI routines and the prompts and the scripts of when you're seen or when you're not seen and what you're allowed to get away with or how you can aggro them your way to kind of draw their attention and do something else. I feel like in those areas, the game falls a little short of what I think its intentions were. But the main story and the main story missions are so excellent that for me, as someone who loves Indiana Jones, all of that other stuff is totally excusable. You know, it does not lower my opinion of the game. My least favorite parts of Indiana Jones and the Great Circle are when I got in large combat situations. I think Indiana Jones worked best when I am taking down one enemy at a time in moments where I'm trying to infiltrate a large Nazi base or fascist encampment, and I have a lot of enemies coming at me for whatever reason, whether I was too aggressive to begin with or someone saw me, I didn't realize that the AI would see me in that time. I found that that is when the game, and I talked about this with my early hands-on whatever it was last month or 2 months ago as well, where that became, no longer did I feel like the fun, sneaky indie using the environment at my advantage to get out of this situation by the skin of my teeth. It felt like, oh, I'm going to kite this group of enemies over here, go through this rote animation of punch, punch, whip, punch, punch, whip, punch, punch, whip, gun, punch, whip, gun, punch, whip, punch, punch, whip, and then try to get back to what I was doing. And so there's enough of that that I think if you are coming to this game strictly for a mechanics standpoint and how those mechanics build upon or overlay on each other, I don't know if it will satisfy you. But for me, as someone who loves the narrative in games, loves a good story, and loves Indiana Jones, Machine Games absolutely knocked this game out of the park, in my opinion.
Boy, very cool to hear. I'm excited to dig into Indiana Jones and the Great Circle myself this week, and I'm sure we'll be talking about it more on next week's episode. But man, fantastic to hear both of you so high on the game. A game that highly anticipated by everybody I know.
To Lucy's point about it coming out late, you know, for not being consideration for the Game Awards, you know, we saw this last year with Avatar. I think to some extent, these big publishers don't care. You know,
well,
like
certainly, yeah. I mean, I think there are bigger fish to fry.
Yeah.
To put a fine point on it. Well, there you go. Indiana Jones and the Great Circle. We'll be talking about more of it next week as well, and I'm sure into the awards, our own awards discussions. But Lucy, there's another game you had mentioned that you've been playing. What is it?
Yeah. So, Plague Inc. Big mobile game. Speaking of Apple and their mobile gaming kind of incentives, I guess. Plague Inc. was one of those ones that everyone, I feel like everyone knows, and certainly during the pandemic, it had a bit of a resurgence because everyone sort of, I guess, in dark humor, decided to start playing Plague Inc. again. They made a sequel. So Plague Inc. is, you know, in one country, a plague begins, and it's up to you to kind of get it to spread around the world. After Inc., you are rebuilding, and it is a kind of strategy game where you and it's on mobiles. I don't say this to be disparaging in any way. It's just very playable. It is very well, in terms of its gameplay, it just works really well on mobile. It's not, you know, it's not too fiddly. You are settling a land, you are building things, you're making sure there is water and there's wood to build new structures, and then you're researching technology, you're kind of building this life for your the remaining survivors, but there are occasionally some zombie remnants who will come and attack, and so you have to make sure that you have fighters who are able to defend the place that you're building up. And there are goals to kind of get you along. So either, you know, say, hey, have this many people live there, or uncover this amount of the map. And it's just really good. I've been finding myself playing it before bed. There are different difficulty levels. There's also kind of, again, I haven't really played Civ, so I'm not sure if this is the most apt comparison, but there are kind of like figureheads who have different strengths. So you can have one person who's a planner, which means that you will automatically make storage for excess things that you need in your inventory, like water or wood or food or something. But it means that you don't regenerate stamina. You just you get a big chunk of stamina, and then you just have to deal with that. And then you don't replenish anymore until way later, and then you get a bunch more. And so, anyway, it's really good. It's I think I got it for $2, and yeah, I'm having a really great time with it.
So that's After Inc., and it's short for Incorporated, so it's INC.
Yes.
It looks like there is a PC version that's coming in 2025 called After Inc. Revival.
Ooh, I didn't know that.
It looks like it's got even more stuff going on with it. Yeah. So very cool. Very cool. I was not aware of this game. What a neat idea. Like rebuild the world after a zombie apocalypse. That's very cool. Just a cool concept. I love it.
Wow.
Well, my playlist also contains a game that is making a very late play for my top five of the year. And I don't know. I don't know how we sit on this one. I don't know how we stand on the early accesses. Christian, I don't know if we made a firm call on the early accessification.
Eligible. Yeah, I'm all in. You know me.
If you played the game, I'm talking about
this year.
What's
eligible? I said if you played it this year and it came out this year, totally eligible.
Yeah, well, it's not the whole game though. I don't know. I don't think I put Baldur's Gate 3 in my top 10 for like the 2 years it was on my hard drive. You know,
it's because you kept not playing it because you knew your save would reset.
It's true. That's true. I did play it though. Anyway, I'm talking about Path of Exile 2, which I've put a few hours into this week. It is out. This is going to be a free-to-play game, but as of now, it is in early access and they're charging for it, which, you know, turns out to be like a really smart decision because I guess it's selling like gangbusters right now. Massive hit in early access. And I think for good reason, Path of Exile 2 is incredible. I am very early in the game, and so much of what this game has to offer, I have not yet experienced. So take that with a grain of salt. But my early impressions are really, really positive. Of course, this is an action RPG along the lines of Diablo, or the first Path of Exile, of course. A top-down, isometric, click until your hand hurts, kind of a mow down many, many enemies and get cool stuff, you know, loot chests, et cetera, et cetera. The cool thing about Path of Exile 2, or one of the cool things about Path of Exile 2, is how good the controller support is. I've been playing it exclusively on my PC with a controller, and it's fantastic. Saves me my carpal tunnel and, you know, my mouse, wear and tear on my mouse. I think it plays so great on a controller. And, you know, I played a bunch of Diablo 4, you know, recently, fairly recently. I'm very high on that game. I think Diablo is in a really good place right now. But man, Path of Exile 2 carves out its own identity in, I think, very smart ways. Of course, it has a sort of grim, dark aesthetic that's very comparable to Diablo. It's got that, you know, loot chest, you know, it look and feel very similar to Diablo. But the details of how you play it, of course, you know, Path of Exile for me is famous for the sprawling, unending, dizzying, bewildering skill trees that they have, this like almost galactic star map of skill trees. And that's still present in Path of Exile 2. And I think, you know, part of the thing people love about it is that theory crafting and how you can carve out these really, really cool builds through these really awesome skill trees. So that, you know, that's part of its identity, and it retains that. But I'm so impressed with just the moment-to-moment play of Path of Exile 2, at least in the early going. I am playing – I have yet only played a monk. So I'm very excited to play other classes. I've played a couple of the other classes at PAX this last summer for brief stints. But I rolled up a monk, and I'm having so much fun. One of the coolest things about Path of Exile 2 is that there's a dodge roll that has no cooldown. So you can constantly be darting in and out and dodge rolling your way away from attacks. And individual monsters will telegraph their attacks like you would find in Dark Souls or something similar. It's really fun to apply that kind of stick and move, watch your enemy, avoid their melee attack, and start to get in and do your damage and do your combos and figure out how to lay down your skills while trying to minimize the amount of damage you're receiving. In that context, it's just not how I played Diablo or have ever played Diablo. I suspect others are more highly skilled than I and may have more of that approach. But those games, that kind of action RPG looter click game, you tend to just wade in and, you know, fire off all your things. And it's this almost mindless is the wrong word, but it is a a much more, you know, blunt force. It's not, you're not fighting with a scalpel, or at least I tend not to play that way. But I find that Path of Exile 2 encourages that kind of scalpel approach as opposed to a cudgel approach in really smart ways. And it makes it so fun and dynamic. I feel like the fights are really skin of my teeth all the time. I'm like on the knife's edge of surviving each, even, you know, just a bunch of enemies surrounding me at any given time, which is constant, right? Because that's how these games are. You're just wading through seas of enemies all the time. But I really feel like I feel very engaged. And, you know, Diablo, part of the draw, frankly, for Diablo for me historically has been that it's kind of relaxing to play it, and you're just OP all the time, and you're just wading through, you know, certainly on the, after you get to a certain point in those games, you know, you're very godlike, and you can just kind of wade through these heaps of enemies almost, you know, Vampire Survivor style. And it's only when you get to the, you know, these other moments of punctuation, boss moments, or, you know, named character moments where you have to really sort of sit up and pay attention to survive. I didn't feel that, at least in the early going with Path of Exile 2. I felt like every fight I was like really thinking and playing the game, really engaged. It's so fun. And then I did get to a number of named sort of boss encounters that even upped that ante further. And I felt like every time that I would die on something, oh, I want a chance to just jump right in and do it again, because I know I can do better. And I know that it's an extremely fun game. One of those games I'm already jonesing to play when I'm not playing it. Like, I just want to get a few more hours on Path of Exile 2. Not a good time of year for that to be happening, by the way, because there's so many other things that I want to get in before the end of the year. But man, what a great early access entry. This game is just so good already, and it already has a ton of content in it. Lots more content coming. Supposedly going to stay in early access for at least 6 months, probably more, as they add more things and tweak more things. But, you know, there's tons of character classes. I think it has 3 full acts of content with tons and tons of items and bosses and dungeons. So it's a full product now, and they're charging money for it now, even though it will be free to play. And it just sings. It's, if you like these kinds of games, I can't recommend Path of Exile 2 higher, at least in my early experience with it. It's excellent.
Do you see the free-to-play grind in it yet? I mean, no, it's got to extract money from you somehow.
No, but Path of Exile 1 was one of the games you would want to put on a pedestal for, like, how to best be a free-to-play game, because it's just not that. It never was. Path of Exile, yes, there's a way to spend lots of money in it should you choose, but it is not a game that is constantly asking you for your money. It is not a game that's constantly reminding you that there's this currency and that currency. It just never was that, the first one. And so Path of Exile 2, you would not know that this is ever going to be a free-to-play game. Now, it isn't right now, so that may change, right? I may be eating those words at some point, but certainly now, when it's, you know, $30 entrance fee, or 40, whatever it is now, you don't even see any evidence of that, or at least I haven't yet. Maybe that will present itself as I get deeper, but I'm impressed with how little it seems to even flaunt that about it.
That's good to know.
I think you're, I don't know, Christian, you tend not to be into these kinds of games, but this one is, it's real good. It's real good. It's Path of Exile 2. We also got a listener who sent us a playlist game at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. I'm going to read this email quickly. This comes from Steven, who says, you guys may or may not be talking about my first Gran Turismo this week, but I wanted to offer a unique perspective on the game because this actually is my first Gran Turismo. For anyone who doesn't know about it, PlayStation is celebrating its 30th anniversary this week and is giving out a free game to celebrate. You may have seen it and ignored it because of the infantilizing title, but I'm glad that it caught my attention. I'm a lifetime car and motorsport fan with over 1,000 hours in the Forza Horizon franchise, but I never felt comfortable taking the plunge into what sounded like a very intimidating sim racer, especially for a $70 entrance fee. I'm 4 hours into this game and have already learned more than Forza Horizon has ever taught me. I finally understand racing lines, turn apexes, and the relationship between braking, acceleration, and steering. I'm looking forward to finishing this game and moving on to GT7 and seeing what other experiences this knowledge might unlock. The game is very simple, with none of the pretentious flair that you guys talked about with GT7. The graphics are sharp on my PS5 base model, and the haptics are top-notch. Even the soundtrack is lovely and festive. For $0 and 25 gigs on your hard drive, this is an experience that no one should miss. Thanks for all you do to make the world a better place, Steven. Christian, what do you think? Did you know that this even was out?
Yeah, it's great, and it carries over to GT7. And, you know, it's kind of like a nice big demo for GT7 and an entry way for folks to be interested in GT, like it worked for Steven. So I think if you are GT curious, it's a really nice way to dip your toe in, and it's cool to know that your progress will carry over should the bug bite you along the way.
There you go. My first Gran Turismo, free on PlayStation. Grab it, according to Steven. All right, we have another huge release we got to talk about before we get out of here, and that is in VR. So let's get into it. Christian and I both got codes for Skydance's Behemoth, a game that I have been very highly anticipating for quite a while. I think, Christian, you're in that boat as well. We both got codes for PlayStation VR 2 versions of the game and PC VR versions of the game. Christian, Skydance's Behemoth. This game purports to be VR Shadow of the Colossus.
Wait, right? What?
Yeah. Takedown.
Now you make me feel worse about being motion sick. Because I was about to be like, I don't know anything about this game. So, oh, man.
That's what it is. It's these behemoths. They're, you know, giant colossi, kind of esque, huge, you know, size of a mountain type creatures. You'll be climbing them and stabbing them and trying to take them down, all the while also dealing with puzzles and you know, sort of human-sized bad guys as well that you're going to be fighting, all in a first-person VR perspective. You've got sort of super magic powers. You've got a cool grappling kind of wrist thing that looks like something out of Assassin's Creed, and you've got a whole bunch of different swords and axes and bow and arrows and shields and stuff as well. So, Christian, Skydance's Behemoth, what say you?
I really like this game. Like you mentioned, we got codes. We got it on Steam VR and also PSVR 2. And for whatever reason, I wasn't having a great time with it on Steam. I felt like I was tweaking settings, stuff I didn't talk about on this show for Indiana Jones. When I first got my review code, I had a whole bunch of crashes and bugs, and the team over at Bethesda and Machine Games were incredible helping me work through those. And so I think, and apparently I was in the minority for Indiana Jones, and they all got ironed out and the game played great. But for the first bit, it was trying. And so I think when I started playing Behemoth, I was like, oh, I don't want to tweak settings. I just don't want to deal with settings on PC for VR. So I've been playing almost exclusively now via PSVR 2 on my PS5. This game is beautiful. You know, the other things that I think it pays homage to, Lucy, is linear Skyrim.
if
there is such a thing as linear Skyrim in terms of the environment and the armor types and the weapons and kind of the aesthetic. And then also a little bit of God of War, you know, current God of War, mm-hmm. of kind of throwing your weapons and having that meaty, intentional, dare I say, combat. And it also has the pedigree of coming from Skydance and who did Saints and Sinners in VR, which is an absolutely incredible VR game. You know, the combat in that game, I think, is interesting. And the way that world, talking about like an immersive sim, you know, kind of experiencing that world in VR and toying with the zombies, I thought was really fun. And so far, I have not finished Skydance's Behemoth. I've taken down the first Behemoth and I'm maybe, I don't know, I got you get special weapons. I'll be vague. I have my second special weapon. I'm a little bit past having my second special weapon. And it's beautiful. On PSVR 2, it is beautiful. I really enjoy the haptics, the headset haptics and the controller haptics that I did not have when I was using my PSVR headset on PC. And it looks really, really good on PS5. Does it look better on PC? Yeah. Yeah, it looks better. But I think it looks really, really good on PS5. And I really enjoy the combat when it is me versus one grunt. I think that is where I have seen the combat shine, because you're using your parries. I'm pulling out different weapons. You know, I have my sword that I pull out from my side sheath and I reach over my back and grab my axe. So I parry with my sword and then I hack with my axe and it lodges into their skull, very reminiscent of Saints and Sinners, and you kind of have that, it sticks for a little bit, you know, and the head's like jerking and then you pull it out. Really, really, really fun. Where the game hasn't been as fun for me is when I am mobbed by enemies and there's a whole bunch around me. I don't know how well the first person VR perspective handles that in a lot of games. I think it's oftentimes I am slower in those moments. And then Jeff, and I'm curious to get your take on it, the first Behemoth fight was a chore. I died a lot, and it flipped onto the side of not super fun because I kept hitting my head. Well, I wasn't hitting my head. It was hitting my head. The Behemoth has this one-hit kill with a ball and chain, and you have a dash, but I feel like I couldn't use it properly. I feel like I was trying to kite it to get it to do this thing, and it became a little more cumbersome than fun. But also maybe I was trying to rush through it. I like the vibes of the game more than anything. And that first Behemoth was a giant steel ball to my head.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. This game has a lot going for it. And it was certainly very tip top of my most anticipated games of this year. I knew I had my eye on it for a long, long time. It has the unfortunate position of having come out after Batman, which just like playing this really highlights how finely tuned Arkham Shadow is and how there's just never any moment in that experience of playing through Arkham Shadow where I didn't feel the game was doing exactly what I wanted it to do at any given moment. You know, like I felt like I was completely in perfect control of Batman all the time. I was never fighting the controls. It just felt like I was embodying Batman. And it's kind of unfair, I think, to compare anything to that, because that's just an extraordinary accomplishment. But I also couldn't help but compare this to Asgard's Wrath 2, which I think is much closer in the wheelhouse to what this is attempting to do. And I think is far superior game. But I do think that Behemoth has a lot going for it. As you say, the vibes are great. I think you're underselling how much better the PC VR version looks than the PlayStation 2 VR. And that's really a bummer, I think. PlayStation 2 VR on PlayStation 5. I said that wrong. PlayStation VR 2 on PlayStation 5. Should do a better job than this. And it's a bummer. Obviously, there's three versions of the game. There's the sort of MetaQuest standalone version that's going to look the worst. I didn't have a firsthand experience trying that. But I did go from PSVR 2 version on PS5, the base PS5, to PC VR on a beefy GP. But it's like night and day. I mean, the game looks so much better on PC VR. Yeah,
I mean, I jump back and forth too. I don't know. It looks better, but I wouldn't put it as night and day better. I would be like, it's better, but the haptics and the not tweaking settings was worth it for me. But also, right, you know, fair. Spoiled to be given codes for both.
Yes, agreed. I had a lot of issues with the PSVR 2 version. I kept I got really frustrated with the controllers. I kept hitting the PlayStation button just because of how it worked. I had to turn on toggle hold, where you push the grip button to hold something and then you can let go of it and you push it again to drop something, rather than the much more immersive just hold on to it when you need to hold it, because I was holding onto my sword and kept my thumb kept sliding into my PS button and then going load up the menu, and oh, it was so frustrating. Anyway, that's not really a this game issue. It's more of a PSVR 2 issue, which bums me out for those of the controllers that are coming to the Apple Vision Pro. Anyway, whatever. These are me issues.
No, they're not just you issues. I'm sure a lot of other people have those issues too. You're giving them a space on the stage to talk about it, you know?
Indeed. Thank you, Lucy. It's boneheaded that they put a non-recessed PS button. It's actually, what's the opposite of recessed? Protruding. But a button that protrudes out beneath your thumb button. So your thumb, I don't know if you guys know this, but your thumb sticks out from your hand.
What?
And yeah, it's the tip of your thumb where you push a button is connected to the rest of the thumb. So when you try to push a button, sometimes the rest of your thumb will hit that protruding button that's right below the button you wanted. And that just immediately pulls you out of the game and loads up the overlay. And it's very frustrating. Anyway, there's my rant on that. Here's what I think the Behemoth does wrong, ultimately. I think there's a lot of nits that I could pick in it. But the biggest gripe that I have about this game is that it has a stamina bar. I think this is a disastrous decision for this game. I understand why. It's because that's how these things tend to be in non-VR games, right? It's doing a very sort of Dark Souls-esque style of combat where any enemy can kill you, which is awesome. I have no problem with that in this context. But also you have to sort of stick and move because you only have a few things you can do until your stamina runs out. There are ways to increase your stamina over time, but ultimately you're managing a stamina bar as you might in Dark Souls. So if you parry an incoming attack, it depletes your stamina. Mm. If you swing, it depletes your stamina. If you throw your weapon, which you can in this game, it depletes your stamina. All of that makes sense for games where you're just pressing a button to do something.
Yeah.
It makes sense. But I'm actually doing these things.
I was going to say, is that like a weird...
I have actual stamina, Lucy, that I'm using to do them.
Does it not make you feel like, oh, am I supposed to be tired? Because like in game it says I've got no stamina. Is that like a weird feedback loop thing?
It is... I find it to be extraordinarily frustrating.
Yeah.
Because, first of all, you don't want to look at your stamina bar while you're in VR because it requires actually tilting your head down to look at the UI. Mm. So the way they get around the solve that they have for this actually is pretty clever. When your stamina runs out, your vision focuses. It narrows. A field shows up around. Think of it like the red outline when you're low on health, but this is not red, it's a different color to show that you're low on stamina. So it basically restricts your vision. It right. tunnels your vision, which actually makes a lot of sense because you have to know that you're low on stamina. The game has to tell you without you having to look at the bar. Mm-hmm. But ultimately I find it extremely frustrating that now my vision is impaired when I am low on stamina. And also, I run out of stamina like blocking two hits or throwing my weapon twice. Now I'm out of stamina and now my vision is tunneled and now I have to back away. It's like I understand that there needed to be some limits on climbing because climbing is a big part of this game. You have to climb up the behemoths to take them down. Mm-hmm. And every other game like Shadow of the Colossus, there has to be some restriction on that or... what do we do? You can just cling on forever. You can't just cling on to the thing forever. That would be unrealistic. And I understand maybe that design consideration. But applying that to the combat, the everyday combat between you and the other humanoids in the game, I think is a disastrous decision. It becomes wildly unfun. And I mean, the other thing that doesn't make any sense is how you parry in this game. And so much of the game is about parrying. Every other VR game in which I've parried, when the swing is coming at me, I place my sword at cross purposes with their incoming attack, right? I position my sword to block their parry. Not so with Behemoth. You need to actually swing it at their sword in the right angle, which makes sort of my brain not work, right? Because that's not how you actually use a sword. You don't swing to parry. You place a sword in the right position to parry. So I'm constantly trying to train my brain to swing it instead of just position it. But also, it means that I am very frequently not positioning it correctly to do the parry. And so I'm just getting hit. And it's extremely frustrating. But even when I do parry, it uses up my stamina. And so I'm trying to swing. I'm swinging my sword. They parry my attack. And now my stamina is gone. But it's like, I'm doing this. I'm in it. I'm swinging my arms around. I'm raising my shield. I'm swinging my axe. I don't want to be arbitrarily restricted from continuing to do that. Am I the gamer actually lifting a huge heavy shield and a huge heavy two-handed sword? No. And I understand that it's not a complete one-to-one, but I am doing the thing. Like, let my own stamina be what restricts me instead of this sort of arbitrary limiter that nothing fun about my vision tunneling and me having to back away when I'm sort of doing my cool combos. And so, you know, I am dying more than I would like. I am getting frustrated in fights. You know, walking into an arena, as kind of Christian said, where there's like three or four enemies, I go, oh no, I don't want to do this. Whereas in Batman, it's like, hell yeah, here we go. Batman gets to be awesome now. And in Asgard's Wrath 2, it's, oh boy, I better do this well. Because Asgard's Wrath 2 has this kind of combat, parrying, grappling hooks, shields, dashing around, and it throws lots of enemies at you, and it gets challenging. But every fight that I lost in Asgard's Wrath 2, I thought, oh, I can't wait to try that again because I know I can do better. It's kind of the same thing I was talking about with Path of Exile 2. I love that feeling when the game defeats me and I go, yes, oh, I was so close. I know I can do better. Yeah, I have all the tools I need to do this. That's not how I feel with Behemoth. When I die in that game, I'm like, oh, come on. Come on. Really? I was out of stamina. Like, oh, come on. You know, it's just very frustrating. And again, it's not analogous to running out of stamina in a Dark Souls where you're staring at the screen and all the information is there and it's this third person thing. You're not inside it. So anyway, I know I'm ranting about it, but I'm pretty disappointed with much of this game, even though I think so much about it is cool. Like how you get new weapons in this game is super cool. You're literally like knocking somebody down and taking their weapon. You know, there's the grappling hook is cool, although it doesn't work like I would want it to do. But there's so many cool ideas in this game. It just doesn't feel completely baked. And I don't know if it was rushed out before the end of the year. I mean, I know Christian and I are huge fans of Skydance. We have friends that work there. It pains me to say this, but I hope this game can be patched and get made a little bit better and make that stuff feel a little bit more well-tuned to my taste, because I think I want to love this game and I think there's so much cool about it. It's just hard when there are great examples of VR games just not having these issues for me.
Yeah, it's interesting that you know, I feel like I'm on a different side of the fence from you. And in terms of the first Behemoth, I beat my head against, and I had a situation where I was like, I'm not taking this stinking headset off until I beat it. And I kept getting one hit and my dash couldn't get me out of the way. And I was very frustrated with that boss encounter. And then when I got it to work, it wasn't like a, oh sweet, you know, Souls like boss moment where I did the, you know, it's like I pulled, finally pulled it off. It was like, yeah, I did the thing I've been trying to do, and I was able to have it happen the way I wanted it to. So it wasn't super satisfying. But other than that, I have found, you know, I don't, maybe the game doesn't teach some of the mechanics well. You know, thinking about the stamina stuff, I use a small sword as my parry sword, and I keep an axe on my back because that breaks armor and breaks shields. And so I very rarely use, you get some, you know, pretty big weapons in it, but those things are stamina killers. And I have not found them useful enough to warrant that trade-off for my play style. And I've kind of found that it doesn't take a full swing to parry. It's kind of like a, I feel like I'm meeting the weapon where it is, you know, so I'm not swinging my whole arm the way I would just do a strike. I'm kind of flicking my wrist. You know, I'm orienting it in the direction of the attack and then flicking my wrist at the time to create that nice parry mechanic. And then I'm taking the axe off my back and whacking at this thing's head. And I found that to be super satisfying. But Jeff, as we talked about off air, and our listeners probably know this about me, I play most games on easy. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I'm playing Indiana Jones on the hardest difficulty or that I'm playing almost any game on the hardest difficulty. I'm almost always very upfront as to what difficulty setting I am playing games on. I did play Indy on normal, I believe. And Behemoth is no different. I went into it and I forget what it's called. It's, you know, not like just give me the story dummy, but whatever that lower difficulty level is, because I'm oftentimes in VR games for the vibes and to hang out and live in that world. And so I don't know if that's the difference we're having in combat, but I do find myself gravitating toward certain weapon pairings because others don't meet my gameplay style. And I've been very satisfied with throwing daggers on my hip, a medium-sized sword on the other hip, and then my axe behind my back and a bow and arrow on my other shoulder. And I feel very well equipped for, you know, my encounters.
I find the bow and arrow, which is shocking because bow and arrow is like the VR thing. Like bow and arrows in VR is like a home run all the time. I find the bow and arrow in Behemoth to be utterly useless. Utterly useless. But again, I'm playing on what they call the standard difficulty level, which is not hard. It's just they call it standard. So I don't know. We were texting back and forth. There is an early boss fight before you even get to the first Behemoth that I was ready to like rage quit the game because of how ludicrous it was. I should have thought to try to turn the difficulty down. I didn't. I just kept beating my head against it. And ultimately, the way I got past it is I just cheesed the game. And it made me feel cheap and bad. It didn't feel satisfying. It wasn't like, wow, I really did this. You get this cool power where you can grab people and throw them, sort of a Robo Recall-esque, but it doesn't work as well as in Robo Recall. And I just would just grabbed the, you can't throw this boss because it's like a boss character. So you can't throw them. They're too big. So the game doesn't let you throw them, but you can grab them by the head and hold them. And I just held them and stabbed repeatedly with my sword. Just stabbed them repeatedly.
A2 Brute.
Yeah. Like it was the goofiest thing. I just like, you know, forced the bad guy not to move and just stab as fast as I could. And that finally worked, which I don't think is how the game wants you to beat that character. But I couldn't avoid their attacks. They get that thing where you have to dodge, but your dodge doesn't dodge far enough for you to dodge out of the way of their attack. It was just like the whole thing was extremely frustrating. Anyway, I don't need to rant about this game. It feels bad because I was really rooting for this one. We love the people that made it. So it's hard for me to say it's falls short for me, but it does.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm stoked for the second Behemoth fight. I think I'm like right at it, and I've heard it's epic. So I'm sure I will be talking about it more here in these last couple episodes before the year wraps up.
All right. There you go. That's Skydance's Behemoth in VR. And that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. But Lucy James, you are awesome. thank you so much for being here. We had such a blast talking to you.
Thank you so much for having me. This was really fun. I'll break out some ginger to get through my VR sickness because you've given me a lot to think about.
Well, I feel for you. That's rough. And I know that it's a big impediment for some folks even giving it a chance, which is such a bummer because there are some really, really excellent experiences to be had. But
yeah,
I get it. Speaking of excellent experiences, tell folks where they can experience all the things that you do in online.
Oh, I mean, I'm sorry that I'm everywhere, I suppose. I'm Lucy James Games everywhere. That's my username. My day job is I work at GameSpot and Giant Bomb. And we have a very exciting big week. So we are doing we're doing Giant Bomb at night from Los Angeles the day before the Game Awards. So we have a lot of cool developers and content creators and media folk coming through just to hang out on stream and have a good chill time. And then on Thursday before the Game Awards, we'll be live in LA Live just outside the theater. And we are doing a countdown to the Game Awards show where we're getting a lot of the nominated developers through. We're getting actors from games from this year, developers, and again, media and content creator folks to come and celebrate 10 years of the Game Awards with us. It shall be a very, very fun show. And then when I'm not doing that, I have a podcast with SkillUp and Jake Baldino from Game Ranks called Friends Per Second, which you very kindly gave a shout out to earlier. We are shooting our in-person Game Awards special the morning after the Game Awards, which we promised that we weren't going to do that because it's the morning after the Game Awards is usually a tough one. but we are doing it this year, and we have some very cool guests. So you won't want to miss it if you're into any of the stuff that we do over there. And yeah, I think that's just about it. And then I'm gonna pass out for the holiday break.
Sounds like you will have earned it. Yes. Very cool stuff. So I have to ask you, since we have you here, what is your pick for Game of the Year of the nominees?
Of the nominees, just out of the six?
Yes.
It's either Balatro or Metaphor or Astrobot. Mm. However, my actual Game of the Year outside of those, I'd have to really think about it because it's a toss-up between Thank Goodness You're Here, Indiana Jones now, Lorelei and the Laser Eyes, and Rise of the Golden Idol. So
love it. No, that's great. That's all we need. Love it. I think those are excellent picks. Yeah. I won't force you to get any more specific than that.
I don't think I could. Yeah, you asked me for one game and I listed off five.
That's fantastic. Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
I write a newsletter about video games that folks can subscribe to for free at christianspicer.substack.com. I still owe some people some replies from the last one. I'm trying to put together some end of year thoughts, but I'm still playing games that I want to put more time into before I kind of put those thoughts down onto virtual paper. And then I will say again, this show, we were gifted by Secret Santa 10 Cool Ranch level subscriptions to the DLC Patreon that we want to give out. So email us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com, subject Secret Santa, and we will select 10 of those at random, put them in a random number generator, blah, blah, blah. You know the drill. And hook you up with your free month to listen to paid DLC, all of the seasons of Feeling This, all the good stuff that we got over there. So thank you again to Secret Santa. And you can follow us on Blue Sky. We are on Blue Sky now at DLC Hype Train, and I am there as well as Christian Spicer. Jeff, what are you doing before you pass out for the holiday break?
Oh, I don't know. Trying to survive my children.
It never works that way, by the way.
Yeah, it never does.
Children are famously chill around the holidays, too.
Yes, particularly mine. there's other shows you can listen. I will also cramming in all the movies for our end of the year movie roundup. A lot of great, great movies coming out right now. Talking about them on the Filmcast, which you can listen to wherever you find podcasts. Also, my comedy science podcast is called We Have Concerns. You should listen to that as well. Good stuff. And the book club where Lana Bashinsky and I are going through the Malazan Book of the Fallen. You can find that on my YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/KanataJeff. But the audio version, also, those Secret Santa, gifting people that, because that's part of our Patreon as well. All right, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts. Hey, give us a suggestion. Lucy, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
Yes. I am a big fan of Apple TV. A lot of some fantastic programming. I don't know why I said it like that. That's a really weird way. It's like saying hashtag content. No, it's I really love a lot of the shows that Apple TV put out. Like Slow Horses is fantastic. Bad Sisters has season 2 going on right now. What I've been doing, I've been rewatching Severance because it has been long enough. And the new season starts mid-January. It's not a particularly cheery time, but it's some really good television.
So
and I've
good.
Completely forgotten it. I forgot that Christopher Walken's in it. right. And so when he popped up, I was like, oh yeah, he's in it. It's great. I can't say enough good things about Severance. I'm so excited for season 2. I'm so excited that I'm not going to watch the trailer for season 2. I just want to jump straight into it. So that's what I recommend. It's only 8 or 9 episodes too, and it just the 45 minutes goes by so quickly because it's so good.
Love it, yeah, such a great show. I cannot wait for season 2. Great suggestion to rewatch it too, because I think I should probably do that as well. Christian Spicer, what is your parting gift?
I'm not going to pretend to understand all of the beef and all of the call outs and all of the shade delivered on this album. But the beats have stayed with me. It is no longer brand new. But if you have not listened to GNX, Kendrick Lamar's newest album, man, did you guys know that he's good at his job? did you know that this guy Kendrick, I think, is going to have a career?
If only it was compensated appropriately.
If only. It's an unbelievable album. Again, I think the beats are second to none, and they're just infectious earworms that kind of drive me through the day. I think it's a really, really sharp album. Again, there's a lot of conflict in the rap world earlier in the year with Kendrick and Drake, but it also gave us bangers that became LA's rally cry for the Dodgers throughout the playoffs. And this album, GNX, I think is top tier Kendrick stuff. If you haven't listened to it, give it a spin. It is not kid friendly, so do not think that this is like, oh, I liked the Black Panther soundtrack and so did my kids. Let me play GNX. No, do not play GNX around your children. But in terms of the rhymes, the lyrics that Kendrick delivers, and then just the beats behind it, truly incredible. It's GNX by Kendrick Lamar.
Well, if you are looking for child-friendly fare musically, we have a wonderful tradition here on DLC at this time of year. One of our favorite listeners, friends, co-collaborators, the gentleman responsible for many of those awesome bumpers that you hear, some of our biggest bangers and most memorable tunes, Sean Madigan and his family do an annual holiday song. He and his family get together and they write and record a song every year. We have been so delighted to be able to share those in the past several holiday seasons, and this year's no different. So excited. The new song is out. It's called Kitty in the City. And this one is inspired, written, co-written by one of Sean's children, who is describing, I think, a dream or a story that they had. They came up with it. There's a lot of really adorable child audio in this song. And you can check out the song all over the place, wherever you get cool songs. It's on the best place to go is just to go to madigan.me, madigan.me. But because Sean is awesome, he has allowed us to put it in the show. So at the end of the show, we're gonna show or play Kitty in the City for you, so you get a taste of how much fun they have as a family with some delightful, wholesome holiday goodness. So stick around after the end of the show and you'll hear that. Thank you, Sean Madigan and family, for always delighting our ear holes every single week with your bumpers and every single holiday season with their family holiday song. All right, we also got a listener suggested parting gift. This was sent to us by Guy Mora. Guy says, the holiday season is upon us. In case you were a little late to the game, indulge yourself with something nice this year, a real Christmas tree. Yeah, I know plastic trees are really convenient, but there's something magical about going with the family to pick the tree and waking up the next morning with the house filled with the fresh pine scent before your nose gets too used to it. They are compostable. Probably your city gets it for free and turns it into mulch. And they don't occupy space in your garage, attic, and basement. I grew up in a tropical climate where it was actually summer in December, so I couldn't have a real tree until recently. Now I'm catching up with my childhood wishes. Happy holidays to everyone. Thanks, Guy. That's a lovely sentiment. One I completely disagree with, but I love that you feel that way. I will never have a real tree again, ever. It's just so much easier and nicer not to have pine needles in my house.
We're a real tree family over here.
Oh,
love
yeah?
It.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
Impressive.
We've gone and chopped them down. You know, I feel like a real man. Put on my flannel. Yeah. Give me an axe, you know? Let's go cut some trees down, bro.
I'm a real man when I plug my pieces together and flip the switch and the lights light up automatically.
Spruce up the branches.
So good, yeah.
No, I live by myself. I'm friends with I used to be Greg Miller's roommate and his wonderful wife, Jen. And so I am Auntie Luce. I'm godmother to their child, Ben. And so we have a tradition every year that we go pick up the tree, and it's always a real tree. But it's obviously more about the kids at that point. Whereas
Is it with Greg?
No,
I'm just kidding.
No, it's not.
He's the best big kid, right?
He is. Actually, I was going to say, yeah, we did this before Ben was born too. The thing is that I have two cats. So I feel just a tree in general is a recipe for disaster. Even just having regular plants is not not the best, as they love to keep them trimmed. You know, they're doing me a favor. I just don't really have to. But I am moving, and my new landlords, who also my friends, got me a little rosemary bush. Aww, a rosemary thing. So they were like, lovely. Yeah, you can decorate it for Christmas, but then it's actually useful for you afterwards. I was like, oh, I like that. It still smells good.
Yeah.
I know we're long already, but I have to tell a quick anecdote. My sister-in-law was here this weekend, and she told a story about how her friend had a real tree. Their kid, young kid, left the door open, went outside for some reason, left the door open, and a squirrel ran in the house.
Oh, no.
And then got in the tree, like full on National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation style. And she called her husband and was like, well, there's a squirrel in the tree. What do I do? Husband is across town at work. He calls 911. Like, my wife's got, is there something we can do? They released the 911 call publicly.
Oh, no.
It's like on the news. And she like sent her this website. She's like, this is me, my house. And you can hear the 911 operators like talking, the dispatcher talking to the cop. And she's like, yeah, there's a squirrel in their tree. It's hilarious. Anyway, that'll never be me because I got a plastic tree. Anyway, just saying. Safety first, kids. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Lucy James and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those awesome bumpers. You can always get merch for the show with the show logo and all the cool stuff from the show by heading to our store, which is store.dlcpod.com. Of course, our biggest thanks always are reserved for our patrons who make this show possible. Thank you, patrons. You can become one at patreon.com/dlcpod. Or if you want to send us an email, maybe you can be one of the lucky 10 that gets a Secret Santa subscription for the holidays. dlcfeedback@gmail.com is where you send that. All right. We'll see you next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.
A cat just meowed and a person just made it purr. And then at bedtime, the person slept and the cat sneaked out of the house and then it was in the city.
A cat just meows in her comfy house cause she dreams to be in the city. But a person makes her purr and she's not so sure. She's not as scared.
Snuck out the door.
The streets were covered in dusty snow, and the lights blinked red and green. Shops were winding down, could barely hear a sound.
Hey Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.